You're listening to an episode of NARCAD's Core Podcast Series. For more information on academic detailing, visit us at narcad.org and stick around after this episode.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of NARCAD's Core Podcast Series. My name is Kaylin Arrington, and I am the Program Manager at NARCAD. Today, we will be talking about some frequently asked questions that we get around academic detailing. And with us to answer those questions is NARCAD's director, Dr. Mike Fisher. Hi, Mike. How are you doing today?
Good, thank you.
Awesome. So let's get started. To start off, how would you describe academic detailing in 30 seconds or less?
Academic detailing is direct one-to-one educational outreach with a frontline clinician to help them understand how the evidence for a specific clinical problem or challenge can be applied to help them make better decisions for the patients they care for.
And then why is academic detailing so critical to patient care?
It's because of that piece in the brief definition about applying the evidence to make decisions to help the patients that we as clinicians care for. In frontline clinical medicine, there, especially from the point of view of a generalist, a primary care clinician, whether in adult medicine or pediatrics or geriatrics, any of those areas where you're covering the full range of patient problems, there's so much research out there, so many guidelines and articles and treatments and tests to keep track of, that it's difficult, if not impossible, for us in wearing our clinical hats to keep up on that. And so being able to bring the evidence to those clinicians on the front line in a way where they can understand, here's how this fits with the kind of patients I see. Here's how I can make a better decision about their screening for this disease or their treatment for this condition or how to advise them about a problem they're having. That's invaluable for those clinicians who all want to do the best for their patients, but just don't have time to review every single piece of evidence themselves.
Great. Can you talk about some of the health issues that can be improved by these one-on-one visits with clinical educators and the frontline clinicians?
Yeah, I think it's a really important point that you bring up, that when we think about where academic detailing fits best, it's important to try to identify the clinical areas where it's most useful, where it's best suited. And I think those are the areas where there is some detail to the evidence and some nuance to it, so that it's not as simple as look at one quick table or fact and you know exactly what to do, but there's maybe a little more depth. You need that one-on-one discussion. And sometimes where you're really making changes and the ability to have that one-on-one conversation, have a clinician be able to open up and say, gee, I don't know what to do in this situation, or perhaps what we're doing is a change in my practice. So to give a couple of concrete examples of that, one area where academic detailing has been used very, very widely in the last few years, 2017, 18, 19, has been for responses to the opioid crisis, where there's a lot of different evidence about how to treat pain, what to do to help our patients with opioid use disorder, how to screen, how to identify and diagnose, how to refer or help patients oneself. All of those are complicated, and there's a lot of nuance to them. People may be a little uncomfortable because it's hard to say, I'm not sure what to offer someone in pain if I'm not supposed to use opioids, or I've never been really comfortable with opioid use disorder. Maybe we have a little bit of personal stigma about it that is a barrier. That's exactly the kind of circumstance where in a one-on-one conversation, a clinician can really open up, be in a position to learn the most effectively. So that's one of the most common, but it's also true in areas as an example of something that is incredibly common in general medicine, in diabetes care, where there are several new classes of medications that have come out in the last couple of years, and the studies that were used to get them approved were done differently than the studies for the older diabetes drugs were used to. So there's a lot of new information about diabetes. the guidelines have become much more complicated. And it's a tough thing to sit in a lecture hall, have someone put up one slide about diabetes in a continuing medical education lecture and absorb all that. You really need to engage to understand the complex interplay among three or four brand new classes of drugs that frontline doctors and other clinicians may not be super familiar with yet. Those are the situations where that one-on-one approach can really have a big impact.
Awesome. Going back to the opioid crisis, we've been working a lot with folks working on that. And one common question that we get is, how do we find clinicians or clinics to visit? Will they feel targeted? So how do you think the best way to find clinicians or clinics to visit?
There's multiple ways to do it. I think the right answer is going to depend a little bit on the specific context in which a program's being implemented. But as a general rule, if you're the person designing an academic detailing program, or you're the academic detailer yourself and you're looking at the clinics and the clinicians that you might visit, certainly when you're starting, you want to be maximizing your impact. And at the first level, that's high volume. Who sees a lot of the patients who are relevant for the kinds of intervention you're doing, who are high volume primary care providers? If it's a problem, if the opioid crisis in a given area is playing out a lot through emergency departments, if there's limited primary care access, then it may be that you need to focus more on the emergency department clinicians. So you do want to think about the highest volume. The other piece that comes up, and especially for opioid crisis related academic detailing interventions, is whether to use any data that you might have available to try to identify clinicians who have patterns of care that might seem a little bit concerning, who prescribe a lot of opioids or have a lot of patients in their primary care panel who've been seen in the emergency department for opioid overdose or things like that. That can be very impactful. One needs to do that carefully so as not to undermine the relationship with a clinician. There may be good explanations. Sometimes there's one clinician who has been willing to take on a cohort of patients who were maybe overprescribed opioids back 10 or 15 years ago. Other clinicians have left, retired, stopped prescribing that way, but we as a medical system created this cohort of patients and we owe them an obligation of good care. And if you're the clinician who's taken on their care, you're probably not a bad prescriber. You may certainly benefit from some help and education. So I think that kind of targeting can be very helpful if it's done carefully and sensitively. But in any program and for any individual academic detailer, you always want to be thinking about your goal. Your goal is to make care better. So who's got the volume of patients and the volume of relevant patients that'll let you make steps towards that goal?
That's really important to point out. So far in 2019, we have had 6 2-day academic detailing trainings. I think the most common question we've gotten is, what kind of health professionals make the best educators for academic detailing? How important is it to have a clinical background?
So having a clinical background definitely helps. It would be silly to pretend it doesn't, but it's not an absolute requirement. Effective communication skills, especially good listening skills, and the ability to be flexible and to learn collaboratively with the person you're working with, those are the things that really make great academic detailers. If you have a clinical background, the most common background, I think, historically for academic detailers has been as pharmacists, because so many of the early phase academic detailing interventions focus just on prescription drug use. So pharmacists have been the most common. So if you're doing that kind of intervention, being a pharmacist is unquestionably an advantage. You know a lot of terminology going in the door, and it saves you a lot of time. But acquiring the skills to do academic detailing, to communicate effectively, open the door to the kind of really transformative conversation and educational session that will change someone's behavior, really does require the communication skills. So I think you can be from any health professional background to do it. It is clearly an advantage if you know the clinical area you're talking about. That saves you a lot of time. But we've seen physicians with specialty training who know all of the terminology going in the door, for whom it's really been a struggle to pick up the skills of academic detailing and to move out of lecture mode into interactive education mode. And we've seen people from public health departments with a bachelor's degree background, perhaps not even focused on a clinical area, who have great communication and education skills, who've done terrific work, who probably needed to work a little harder to learn the clinical terminology, but can be very effective. So a clinical background is an important leg up and definitely lets you get in the field quicker, but is not an absolute requirement. If you have the right skills, you can learn how to do this.
A follow-up question to that one that we always get is, well, will a physician not take me seriously if I don't have an MD?
That's an important concern, and I think if we're being totally candid, there are definitely physicians out there who are very status conscious and would put up more barriers for someone who didn't have as much of a clinical background. That could definitely be a challenge. As a matter of experience, we've seen lots of academic detailers with limited clinical backgrounds, whether it was something like pharmacy or public health that is a detailed training of its own, but they're not a physician, or even people with a public health background who don't have detailed clinical training who've been extremely successful. But there's no question that some physicians, especially, will push back hard on someone who hasn't had exactly their same experience. As we often go over in our trainings, being open and transparent about that is critical for the academic detailer who's in the field, who finds themselves in that, what is obviously a somewhat uncomfortable situation, to work around it and to have a successful interaction, to be upfront about, here's my background, here's what I do and what I don't do. And if you get the conversation off on the right foot, it can actually really help to frame it, because you can, as the academic detailer who's not a physician, or a frontline clinical provider, if you're saying primary care, so you're not maybe a physician, a nurse practitioner, a physician's assistant, you can say, I'm not in that role. And as we always say in academic detailing interventions, I'm not here to dictate to you how to practice. You as the primary care or other frontline clinician, that's your role. I'm here with knowledge on a specific clinical problem that we're working on today. And sometimes that framing helps. It helps actually open the conversation to say, I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm not here to question the way you practice medicine. But there is an area where we have new information. We have something useful that we can bring you. And that's what the conversation's about. Can we guarantee that no one will ever have an uncomfortable interaction? No, of course not. There'll always, interpersonal interactions like this, there'll always be some that don't go perfectly. But that openness can really help get around a barrier that often is sort of a proxy for people who are very busy or under stress and maybe looking for a reason to just move on. If you have that openness, if you create a window for the conversation, you can in fact be impactful and successful regardless of your own background that you bring to the conversation.
Right. That's important to point out, that someone who might be not wanting to speak with someone that doesn't have a clinical background, they might not really want to speak to anyone. You know, they might be busy and not have the time, not be interested. So I think we've laid a nice foundation for some of the big questions around AD. Now for a question that might be a little more fun, what is the most exciting thing that you've seen happen as a result of academic detailing?
I think the really exciting moments in doing this kind of work are those when you open a new door, when you really create a new opportunity. And so the one area I'd call out initially on that would be some of the work we've been doing in collaboration with our colleagues in New York and San Francisco on academic detailing for HIV PrEP, HIV pre-exposure prophylaxis, to work with public health professionals from around the country, from city and state and county health departments all over, to help them learn how to do academic detailing focused on HIV PrEP going to frontline clinicians to add it to their practice. That's really exciting because you see clinicians opening themselves up to something new, people who don't think of themselves as providing HIV care. I mean, they're good clinicians. They care about their patients. They care about their risk of getting HIV. But there's a perception of that it's very complicated. You need specialty training in infectious diseases and HIV medicine. And certainly there's a lot of medicines to treat patients who have HIV. It's much more complicated than it was when the first drug or two were coming out. And one relies on those specialists to manage our patients with HIV and make sure that we're doing it right. But for so many in primary care, the idea that we can be part of preventing new cases of HIV, that there's an opportunity to actually drive the rates of new cases down. And of course, the CDC's campaign is focused on getting to zero as an ultimate goal. To see people who thought that this was too complicated for them and beyond the scope of their practice start to realize that, oh, in primary care, we have a critical role to play in this. We can make a difference, and this is something we can do. That's really exciting and shows opportunity for all of us in the field as academic detailers, and really for everyone who's in healthcare and in clinical medicine generally. The idea to do something that helps patients that you couldn't or didn't know how to do before, that's really exciting. And when we can tap into that, when we can help people realize that that's something that's achievable and doable for them, it's very exciting and very rewarding for all of us.
That is awesome. HIV prevention is my favorite academic detailing topic. And for more information on that, please check out our last podcast on HIV prevention and academic detailing. Any last words, Mike?
So I think this has been helpful as an overview of some of the underlying principles that we think about as we're working with groups and individuals to design academic detailing programs or help individual academic detailers get ready to go in the field. To me, I think the biggest closing point I would say is keep thinking about those opportunities. We didn't necessarily think of academic detailing for HIV prep as an area that we'd be focusing on several years ago when the first studies came out, until some of our colleagues began adapting the principles of academic detailing, doing that, and then we became involved in some of the training programs that I mentioned a couple of minutes ago. There may well be other great opportunities out there, and my hope is that everybody who hears this, who's thinking about academic detailing, will keep innovating. We'll say, what's an exciting, challenging area where I want to do something new, where I want to make care better? And is there an opportunity there to engage with frontline clinicians, to have them be part of the solution? And to me, that's the most impactful last word. If you have that good idea, if you have an innovation that you want to try to encourage all those clinicians to take up and make available to their patients, we would love to be part of that innovation, part of that excitement.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of NARCAD's Core podcast series. We encourage you to join us for future podcasts. Visit us to see which episodes have aired at NARCAD.org. We also encourage you to visit our Learning Center, as well as our Best Practices blog and our conference and training series pages. If you have any questions about academic detailing, including a desire to reach out and partner with us, we're happy to help. Contact us at NARCAD@partners.org.